Recorded live from the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, this is the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Pelias Pecans.
Awesome!
The Soft Verbal Podcast, your ticket to the latest, most accurate Ole Miss football recruiting information. No spin, no false hopes, just facts from the recruiting trail from RebelGrove.com recruiting analyst Russell Johnson.
Caution, you are about to enter the no spin zone.
And now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
God, here we go again.
Welcome into another edition of the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Billy's Pecans. I'm Neil McCready. Russell Johnson is here with me as well in the Clark Ford Studios. We'll talk some Ole Miss recruiting and other things. We'll also kind of take a deep dive into some Texas recruiting. Matt Clare of Rivals.com covers Texas Tech, Baylor, some other programs. We talked to him for about half an hour. You'll hear that interview here on the podcast as well. Before we do that, let me tell you a little bit about Billy's Pecans. It's billyspecans.com. We've got a promo coming your way here really soon. Be listening to it here in the next week or two. It's a great time to start thinking about some of your holiday orders. Believe it or not, football season's here, which means the holidays are right around the corner, as crazy as that sounds. billyspecans.com. The cinnamon spice pecans, the toasted pecans, all the different chocolate pecans, cheese crispies, coffee cakes, all of that and more. Get in touch with Stacy and Bailey over there at Billy's Pecans. It's billyspecans.com, B-I-L-L-I-E-S, pecans.com. We're coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio. Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900 is the number. Call that number. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you are looking for, and then he'll send you a quote. Ask for a couple of quotes, he'll send those too. It's right to the bottom line. There's no haggling. There's no hassle. It's just a very easy car buying experience. It's shaking the mic. That's okay. It's an easy car buying experience. You get your quote, and you go from there. What I'll tell you about it as someone who's bought from Clark Ford is that you get a great product. You get great service after the sale. Corey wants to be your car guy. He wants to be your truck guy. He'll go up the extra mile, and they'll go the extra mile routinely to make your experience with Clark Ford even better than you could imagine. At the end of your deal, tell Corey that you heard about Clark Ford on the podcast. You can mention, obviously, this podcast. You can mention the Oxford Exxon podcast, the Beer Garden. You can mention the greatest pod in the South. Any of those, $500 off the bottom line on your deal at Clark Ford and Amory, 662-257-1900. Russell, how are you?
Doing good. It was a busy weekend in terms of Ole Miss targets in Lafayette County. Lafayette took on Charleston on Friday night. Lafayette ended up beating them pretty bad. It was like 41-6 or 48-6, something like that. But on the field, you had two Ole Miss commits and Eric Jeffries and DeAndre Prince on the field at the same time. Prince was playing quarterback, running back, receiver, cornerback, safety, kick return, punt return. Prince is basically the Charleston team. And if Charleston's going to compete in 2A down the road this season, it's going to be because of him. And with Lafayette, they had, obviously, Eric Jeffries, who is primarily playing defensive end, you know, as I had mentioned in the Chicks several times over the past week. And then they also have Brandon Turnage, who is finally healthy and really making an impact. He had two interceptions on Friday night as well as a touchdown, that he returned interception for a touchdown. And it's just interesting to see just how things are going to play out with Turnage. I mean, the more you talk to Turnage, the more you kind of think there might be something there, something going on that he doesn't exactly come out and say. And I guess for the first time in a while, I'm the one reading between the lines and not the subscribers of RebelGrove.com. So it's interesting to see kind of how things are taking place and developing. Also, we kind of hinted at it last week. DeJuan Black did transfer to Osceola High School in Florida. He not sure yet currently if he's going to be eligible to play football. Obviously, the Florida commit is there to attempt to get eligible to play for the Florida Gators. I'm very curious to see how that plays out because we all know Black's off the field issues and what the situation is heading into Osceola. And if Osceola is able to fix it, you have to think there are going to be some people in black ties there pretty quick.
Yeah, I saw Oxford Starkville, the linebacker, is it Edwards?
Yes.
He stands out on the off the kind of jumps off the page, if you will. I didn't really notice any other startable kids. The quarterback, good player, young. I think he's a sophomore. I don't know his age. I don't know his name.
That's 2021.
Yeah, well, I'm not doing the whole whether what kind of a prospect he is. Just a good player.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't like projecting kids out when they're freshmen in high school. Yeah. I don't like it. I know why we do it. We do it, frankly, because it gets clicks. That's why we do it. And we do it because other people do it, and so we feel like we need to do it. I don't like ranking eighth graders.
Right, yeah.
I don't like it. I think we have created a culture. Not our site, not Rivals, just in general. We have created a culture where we are ranking everyone. And then we're excusing it with, oh, well, it's just for fun and the kids don't know. The kids know.
Oh, the kids know. There's no doubt.
Carson played in a soccer tournament in Jackson, Tennessee over the weekend. And they played a team from Kentucky on Saturday in their second game. It was the best youth soccer team I've ever seen. U13s. So all the boys were 12. Or supposedly 12. There were a couple that, frankly, I would have liked to have seen their birth certificates, which is another subject entirely. Why people cheat in youth soccer, I'll never get it. I mean, as someone who battles self-esteem, I've never been that hard up for validation that I would cheat in a little league game. I mean, who cares? Anyway, point is, they said this was the 10th ranked team in Kentucky. And I thought, two things. Who the hell's ranking U13 teams in Kentucky? I mean, what dude is so lifeless, so absolutely devoid of an existence that he is ranking U13 soccer teams in the state of Kentucky? I mean, just write that down and look at the words for a minute and go, oh my God, you are never, ever, 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 ever going to a party, are you? Now, then I thought, there are 9 teams better than this in Kentucky? Whew. Soccer in the U.S. has really picked up, baby. Those were my two thoughts. But mainly my thought was, oh my God, how pathetic that we're ranking these teams.
Yeah, and I mean, in soccer especially, you know, kids are getting signed by international academies and teams overseas at uncontrollably, like, young ages. Like, I think there's 9 and 10-year-olds in, like, the Bayern Munich system in Germany from the United States. So with soccer especially, the age is even further back than football, which is saying something, especially when you've got 7th and 8th graders with scholarship offers. And, you know, some of them may be a joke, but for UT Martin's head coach's son, he's got offers from quite a few places, and those are at least expected to become legit offers when the time comes.
Yeah, I don't mind the schools doing the offers. That doesn't bother me. It's the ranking of the kids. The coaches are paid to evaluate the kids. That's their job. We do this deal in society in general, not just Rivals or 24/7 or Scout or whoever owns any of, I don't know, whatever, whoever. Not just that. It's we make decisions on young people, whether they can play or not, before they even play. We make decisions on baseball players at the age of 10, decisions, who can play, who can't. It's effing stupid. On two counts. One, you don't know who's going to grow and who's not going to grow. And number two, God forbid we let's let kids have fun with sports. God forbid we just let it be fun. I mean, nope, we got to make it a damn business and rank everybody. And tell kids, hey, you're 9. You know, it didn't pan out, son.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it's become. That's definitely kind of what it's become. Luckily for Rivals, at least, Currently, the furthest back we've gone in rankings is the class of 2020. So that's saying something.
Oh, good
least.
For us.
Yeah. I mean, we've only rated, I believe, the juniors right now. So,
well, good for us. Kudos to the people at Rivals. No, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Good for us. Hell yes. I'm proud to know that. I don't really mind ranking juniors. That's the first year that it's really kind of real. But I've seen people rank 8th graders who haven't even gone to high school yet. Not, I didn't say haven't played a high school game. Haven't been to a day of high school yet.
Yeah, that's where it gets to be asinine. That's really where
I'm right in saying that some people have ranked those classes, right?
Yes, there are 5-star 7th graders.
Who does that?
I don't know. It's not any of the major sites. The other major site released 2021 rankings, I believe, yesterday. And I think that's even ridiculous.
Because my daughter is in 2021. That's her class.
Does she have any idea what she wants to do with her life?
Absolutely not.
I guarantee you none of those kids do either.
And she's an exceptionally bright kid and doesn't know. It's just stupid. All right, before we get into our interview with Matt, let's touch on an Ole Miss. What's the hottest Ole Miss-related recruiting topic going as we tape this on the morning of August the 28th, 2018?
Do you know how to pronounce his name? Because I do not.
It'd be hard for me to pronounce his name when I don't know whose name it is that we're referencing.
The Nebraska quarterback who didn't win the job and decided he wanted to transfer.
Gebbia.
Yeah, so Gebbia has some Ole Miss ties, which I learned about for the first time.
What's his first name? Is it Alex?
Tristan. Yes, I learned about his previous Ole Miss ties for the first time earlier this week, and I was previously unaware of it, and I was kind of curious as to why everybody was talking about him, why there were threads about him on the message board, and really just why everybody cared so much about a quarterback at Nebraska. But being in Calabasas in high school, and being a part of what Nebraska was hoping was going to be their hashtag Calabraska movement, which failed miserably.
Imagine that. Who could have predicted that making a living on California kids by saying, hey, don't you want to be a part of Calabraska? Who could have even imagined that that wouldn't stick?
Well,
shocking.
He didn't win the starting job at Nebraska under new head coach Scott Frost. And to be honest with you, he's really not a fit in the offense that Scott Frost is planning to run. And he saw that. He saw the writing on the wall. Didn't practice yesterday. Decided to transfer out. He's yet to really issue a public statement. But coaches from schools like Oregon, Memphis, SMU, a couple of JUCOs in Kansas who could get away with taking him right now because they don't have an out-of-state limit. While in the state of Mississippi, if he were to attempt to join a JUCO, it would be so hard. Number one, because they start their season on Thursday, where Kansas started last week. But like I said, they don't have an out-of-state limit. And also because Mississippi has that out-of-state limit where they can't just take a kid from California 2 days before kickoff just because he's a former 4-star. I don't know if Ole Miss is going to get in the picture. I don't know what's going to happen. It all depends on, number one, if he's going to go JUCO and kind of reset his recruitment, or if he's trying to go straight to a school like SMU or somewhere like that where he can make an impact after a year after sitting out.
Look, Ole Miss needs quarterbacks. The odds of Jordan Tamu receiving another season are extremely long if that decision hasn't already been made. There is absolutely no optimism on the part of anyone at Ole Miss that I've heard. Jordan has not expressed any optimism. Matt Corral is there. Matt's a true freshman, so he has lots of eligibility left as his clock gets started.
Did I see he might play Saturday?
I think people – it's one of those deals where someone asks – God, I'm making fun of everybody today. I got to stop. I'm just making enemies left and right. Someone asked Matt, might we see Matt Corral? What's he supposed to say?
Someone literally asked that question in the press conference.
Almost in those words.
Availability.
I saw where Matt Corral's second on the depth chart. Might we see him Saturday? That's where I would have excused Matt if he'd gone, what a dumbass question. I mean, I hope not.
Right.
But, I mean, we're taking him.
Right.
And I guess it's conceivable that Jordan rolls his ankle and has to go back into the thing to get an x-ray, and we have to put extra tape on it and pray to the football gods, please, dear, don't do this now. And we get the ball, and someone's got to play the position for a drive. And I guess it's conceivable, God forbid, that Jordan get knocked out of the game and Matt has to play the rest of it. And so, yeah, we're going to take him, and he's going to wear a uniform and everything. But no, obviously, we don't want him to play.
Right. That's what I was thinking. I was a little taken aback when I saw the quote.
But no, are they putting in a special package for Matt Corral? No. Do you not? Oh, my God.
There's no poly package Saturday?
No, they would love to. They've already acknowledged. They've already said on the record they would love to save his red shirt.
Right.
Is that realistic? I don't know. Jordan Tamu is the quarterback.
That's right.
In their ideal world, assuming they don't win the appeal, Jordan Tamu plays 12 games as the quarterback. And maybe at the end of the year, because of the new rule, give the NCAA kudos for something. They got one right. The end of the year, maybe they give Matt Corral some snaps so that he can get that first out of the way. First snap, first pass, first hit, first incompletion, first completion, first touchdown, first bad read, first good read, all that stuff. Put some stuff on film, get some of the jitters out. So that next year, if things don't change and he's the quarterback, it's not brand new. It's just kind of new.
Right. I agree with that. Right, you ready to get to Matt?
Yeah, in 1 second. But they don't want Matt Corral. If you ask Matt Luke, hey, you get to control this one. Football gods come down and go, hey, Matt, yes or no? You get the answer. Does Matt Corral play Saturday? No.
With no hesitation.
No hesitation. It means Jordan played the game, was healthy. Win, lose, or draw, you save his year. Sometimes people ask questions. I think when they ask the question, they're just asking it, like for the hell of it, to hear themselves talk. And then I guess some people write it, and it's like, what? Were you that desperate for a story? Hey, Matt Corral could play Saturday. Well, yeah.
A to day, Neil. A to day.
I mean, I guess it's conceivable Matt Corral could play Saturday. If Matt Corral plays Saturday, something went bad. Simple as that. Speaking of bad, sometimes you've cut out the lattes, you've put in those Curly Q light bulbs, brown bagged your lunch to work, but it still feels like payday keeps getting here a day or two late and a few $100 short. If that applies to you, try this. Give State Farm agent Wally Morgan a call. Tell him you'd like a free discount double check. It's a line-by-line review of your car insurance policy to make sure you're getting the discounts you deserve, like 10% for being a good driver, another 10% if your teenage driver happens to be a good student, 17% for simply combining your car and home policies. Add all those State Farm discounts up, and it's pretty easy to see how you could be saving hundreds of dollars a year. So get started today by giving State Farm agent Wally Morgan in New Albany, Mississippi a call, 662-539-7062. Because being there to help keep more of your money in your pocket is why he's here. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Discounts may vary state to state. We're also brought to you by Lentz and Little. Lentz and Little PA is Central and South Mississippi's law firm you want to hire for business advice and commercial litigation. Whether you are having trouble paying your debts or someone isn't paying you what they agreed to pay, Lentz and Little can quickly advise you of your best course of action. Lentz and Little has over 60 years of collective experience representing companies and individuals in defaulted loan workouts, collections, repossessions, and foreclosures. Representing banks as well as companies having financial difficulties, Lentz and Little offers creative solutions to financial problems. Attorneys at Lentz and Little have the versatility you need, regardless of whether you need help with general business advice, issues with payment of taxes, or representation in state court, federal court, or bankruptcy court. If you're in need of advice or assistance with your financial situation, call Jarrett Little at 228-867-6050. Visit their website at lintzlittle.com or email jarrett@lintzlittle.com. Now let's go to the Billy's Pecans hotline and listen to Matt Clare of Rivals.com.
We've got Matt Clare from Rivals.com on a member of the network. How you doing, Matt?
Hey, I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
Doing good, doing good. It seems that we've survived yet another offseason. What are things like out there in Texas right now?
Oh, man, crawled through the offseason. You know, things are good. And I think everyone's just happy to get the season started because, I mean, this offseason was – I know you guys had kind of gone through some changes and some things, you know, at Ole Miss, but very similar at Texas Tech with speculation around, you know, would they – fired Kingsbury last year, then they win the last game of the season in sort of dramatic fashion, and then you sort of had a, I don't want to say a split fan base, but a lot of vocal fans that are, you know, tired of being you know, just 6-6 or 5-7, right, over the past 5 years. So it's been a long 6-7 months since the last game.
Yeah, it's been similar to that around here, especially, you know, with the decision to remove the interim tag off of Matt Luke and the coaching search that went on before that and then recruiting after that. Now, what are you expecting on the field, you know, come Saturday? It'll still be morning when they kick off.
I mean, I guess that's the grand question. I haven't put out of an official prediction or anything like that, but I think we had talked to, you know, we always kind of share content, you know, on these game weeks, and we had talked with Neil yesterday, and you know, the meme where Spider-Man's pointing at the other Spider-Man. I mean, it seems like outside of you guys knowing who your quarterback's going to be, there are a lot of similar things, meaning that, you know, you want to feel better about the defense, but you're just not sure. And then, you know, Kingsbury is not named a starting quarterback. You know, a lot of people believe it will be McClain Carter. But that being said, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it were somebody different. And, you know, just saying that aloud, you know, people know about Texas Tech's offense, and we'll probably talk about that a little bit more. Should people worry who the quarterback is? Maybe, maybe not. You know, everybody likes to call it a system, if you will. But at receiver and at running back, there are some question marks, you know, guys being new, guys never, you know, being the guy. But, you know, they're going to have their turn, and Saturday will be their chance to kind of prove what they can do. So I don't know. I mean, I expect it to be a pretty close game, but at the same time, it's hard for me to say, you know, what we'll trot out there on offense. It's a little bit of a backwards type of deal. We usually are questioning the defense, but that's really where the bulk of the experience comes back for Texas Tech.
Now, Texas Tech, the running back that got arrested recently, is he going to play?
Yeah, absolutely. That was a weird deal. And, you know, I guess not to spend too much time on it, what had happened was these guys all live in like apartment complexes. And, you know, I'm sure you all did it in college. You kind of hang out with your neighbors, or people are coming in and out of your house. Apparently this former walk-on took his ID or borrowed it knowingly to go work out at the rec center. While he was there, he stole cell phones and got caught. Well, at the time, all he had on him was the running back's student ID. And so that's how they wrote up the police report. I don't have details, but long story short is it was reported as him being arrested for a felony, you know, the day before. And then the day after, the assistant DA came out and said, we apologize, he should have never been arrested. So kind of a blip on the radar. And it surprised Tech because, you know, earlier in June, they were kind of made aware of the situation and received emails from the court that he was cleared. And then apparently his name never was removed from like the warrant sheets. And so they just went out on warrants and he was arrested. So feel bad for the kid, but he had sat out all last year with academic issues. But you know, that's what I mean is he's not proven. But when he's been on the field, he's been electric. So I think he has a lot of potential, and we're talking about De'Leon Ward, but yeah, just a weird deal. But yes, his name's been cleared. His lawyer emailed us the PDF where they've dismissed all charges. So, I mean, you know, we do this stuff and we kind of just, I don't know, learn to expect the unexpected, but sometimes you're just like, what just happened? I mean, so yeah, that happened. And so he will play.
I'll leave names out of this, but I spoke to someone who is a DA who happens to be a friend of mine in a completely different part of the country. And he was stunned that that happened and basically said that had that been his ADA who had done that, that it would have been strike one and strike two.
Yeah, I mean, again, I mean, probably like you guys. I mean, I'm a sales rep by day and blogger by night. I don't know nothing about the law other than, you know, I try to stay away from them and get in trouble. But yeah, I mean, just a big head scratcher. I mean, I say blogger, not journalist, because that's just not my trade. And everybody kind of knows, get two sources, do this, do that. It's actually a lawyer that we had worked with on a previous incident like 2 years ago had reached out to us, and we caught wind of it, but we didn't really want to report anything and wanted to kind of avoid egg on our face if it wasn't indeed, you know, how it carried out, right? Because there's just so many variables to that thing. But yeah, just a not a good situation, right? And I think that's why you saw the statement, and then everybody sort of clammed up because nobody wanted to point the finger at the other party. But yeah, the good news is he got his name cleared and he's going to be able to play. So him coming back after a full year, you know, he'll probably have to get his feet under him. But I think it really bolsters the running attack, because while he was out last year, they started the season with a JUCO transfer and a JUCO walk-on. And while those guys did okay, I think, as you guys know, that's not really the lifeblood of your recruiting. You know, those are sort of boom or bust prospects whenever you're talking about the JUCO level.
Yeah, definitely. No doubt about it. Now, getting back to the on-the-field product, are you expecting any freshmen to make a real impact in the game on Saturday?
You know, there's going to be some, and there's some guys who came in midterm that joined, and I think that they're going to get some run and they're going to get some playing time. You know, how much that they play will be kind of remain to be seen, but I think that'll be at the wide receiver position. They got a kid named Myler Royals who's 6'5", about 180, 190 now, and he's from that West Texas area. He was lightly recruited, had some late offers, but he's been a name that's really impressed all spring, so I could see him getting into the game. And then they have a young man named Keyshawn Carter who we got the two deep yesterday, and he was listed on there at inside wide receiver. He's a kid that was on the U.S. national track team, so he is a burner, and he might just be in the game to take the top off the defense. They may not even throw it his way, but he's just electric. So I know that he won the Adidas. They did like a similar to like we do like a Rivals 5-star. Adidas did a national track meet, and he won all of those races up in Boston this summer as well. So just really electric kid. I think those two guys on offense, I don't expect any freshmen to contribute on defense, but those two on offense are names to watch.
Do you expect Cezanne Henry, or I'm not sure if that's pronounced correctly, do you expect him to redshirt this year, or do you expect him to get in more than four games this year?
Well, we talked about Dalian Ward. I mean, with him being back and no, you know, punishment or anything there because of that whole situation we just discussed, I would see Dalian Ward and Trey King getting the bulk of those carries. Now, behind that, they've got a young man, DeMarcus Feltman, who's been with the program quite a while. I think he would be third. Tajon, if he does get on the field, it'll be more special teams, maybe at a scat back type of slot role, but I don't anticipate that. It will be interesting because now that the rules have changed for red shirts and they can't play up to four games, it wouldn't surprise me for Tajon Henry or Sir Roderick Thompson, who's another running back they took last year, to get on the field, but not in a game like this. I think that they'll start with Ward and King, and then maybe those two will either see, you know, fourth quarter time, or they'll play against some of the other out-of-conference games here in the next few weeks.
Did Texas Tech make a run at Deontay Anderson after his whole debacle with Ole Miss?
No, and I actually live down the street from the Andersons here in Houston. I knew his father really well. I think they were headed to Houston the whole time. I think he entertained the Michigan thing just because of his friends. But no, I know that Texas Tech did not reach out. They were really at the time still in transition. They added Clay Jennings and a former graduate coach from another smaller program down here to add to their DB groups on the coaching side. And I know that Clay Jennings had a relationship with him in the past, but I don't think it was something that was pursued.
I gotcha. Now, I'm going to dive right into recruiting with a pretty serious question. From a quarterback standpoint, Texas Tech has Maverick McIver committed currently, and Ole Miss has Allen, Texas quarterback Grant Tisdale. Which of those two do you think Texas Tech would prefer to have, and why?
Well, I know they would prefer to have Maverick. And I know that, I don't know, it was really unique because I talked to Grant during our Rivals Camp series, and Tech, you know, the background for 2019 recruiting with Tech is they were going after Jacob Zeno, who's a kid out of San Antonio down here, and he was really their only target for the better part of 7 or 8 months, and he ultimately committed to Baylor and is still committed to Baylor. What happened with Tisdale is the whole time I knew he was visiting, he was talking with them, and he didn't have an offer right at the beginning, but got one, you know, in the middle of that time, really didn't want to talk about it much. So I hate the word committable offer, but it just didn't seem like a realistic option at that point in time, if that makes sense, because, you know, we write these stories about offers and we do this, we do that, but you know, we can't pull quotes out of kids. He just really wasn't talking about it much. And so I think that was more so where they kind of kept him at arm's length. I like him as a quarterback. I think he can do a lot of things with his legs. I just think that they really like Zeno and they were going after him. And then once they transitioned to Maverick, I mean, it was just kind of all Maverick. I've followed up with Grant. I've talked to his father, and I just don't know if the love was there from a recruiting standpoint. So I know that he kind of assessed his options and went to Ole Miss. Like I said, I mean, I like the player, but I think he fits either offense, right? I mean, Phil Longo does a lot of stuff that Cliff does, and they run a very similar kind of spread attack. Everybody puts their own spin on it. But I don't know. I mean, from an arm strength standpoint, I mean, I would give Maverick the nod. Outside of that, I just don't see a ton of difference in their games. I don't see one being, you know, that much over the other. Now, here in Texas, Allen as a program carries some weight, right? You know, especially compared to San Angelo, which is in West Texas. Here in Texas, we go up to 6A football. Allen's as big as it gets, right? He plays with 5-star talent on the outside at receiver, and he's got a ton of talent, whether 2019 or undergrad, that play with him. So I don't know, as somebody that kind of evaluates recruits or looks at it from a different angle, you know, I take that stuff into context, but you know, I like Grant. He's a good kid. I don't know to what extent, you know, they were really interested. I think there was an unofficial visit and then it was kind of foggy. Do you have the offer? Do you not? And then a couple months later, he said he had an offer. So we'll see. I think he's happy with Ole Miss, and I think that McIver's happy with Tech. So it all kind of worked itself out.
Now, since McIver committed, I believe USC has pulled the trigger on an offer, haven't they?
Yes, they have. You know, at the time, he had mentioned that USC was heavily interested. He mentioned Notre Dame. He mentioned a bunch of other schools. And we've seen more and more schools taking two quarterbacks in each class. I think he's going to visit because, you know, what kid wouldn't just take a visit? But he expressed to us in a story we posted last week that he's, you know, pretty solid with Tech. He just wanted to take his visits because, on the other hand, it's kind of a weird year. I kind of led off by saying the fans were kind of split as to, hey, okay, we're going to have another year of Kingsbury. Well, to be fair to these recruits, they don't know that he's going to be there next year, right? The season starts this weekend, and let's say even if they win this game, you know, they still have to have a good season for him to be retained. And so I think being fair to these recruits, they're waiting, they're seeing, you know, they like the school, they like the town, they like the program. All those things considered, that could change if they decide to go a different direction later this season, right? So that's kind of the approach I've taken with some of these kids. But at the end of the day, right, USC's a blue blood. So if he'd been waiting on the offer and they offer, great, he's going to go check it out. But at the end of the day, they announced JT Daniels. They've got another 2020 5-star kid committed behind that. So the odds of him flipping, I think, are pretty slim. But yeah, he got the offer. So, you know, anytime that you've got one of your commits, you know, you want to see those type of programs offering them, kind of, you know, rubber stamps their abilities as a recruiter, as a prospect. And I know you guys work with Nick Kruger as well. He's our Texas analyst for Rivals. He's really mentioned in two recent articles that he's considering bumping McIver to a 4-star. So that's why I say him and Tisdale are, you know, they're pretty neck and neck when it comes to ability.
Yeah, definitely. I think I would think that if Maverick were to get his 4th star, I would think that, you know, from a numerical standpoint, Tisdale would be the one that likely would drop that 4th star. But that's just going into logistics and everything in terms of rankings. But yesterday, the coaches had their media opportunities and were able to express the fact that recruits are able to visit this weekend for the game. They can't have contact with the coaches, but you know, several, obviously both schools recruit a lot in Texas Tech more than Ole Miss for obvious reasons, But have you heard of any, you know, big name recruits who are planning to check it out?
Yeah, I posted a list this morning, and I think we talked about this last night. Obviously, the people listening to this don't know me, but I don't like what recruiting has become with, you know, all the look at me and videos for, you know, top 25s and stuff like that. It's annoying to me. I don't know where you guys sit with that, but especially for something like this where, you know, class of 2021, right? I mean, we've got our competition in the marketplace, you know, marketing this as five stars going to the event. Okay, well, you know, let's pump the brakes on that. They can't even talk to the coaches. It's free tickets in the city that they live in. You know, it kind of is what it is. I know that a large contingent of the commits will be there, of course. They've got an offensive line target from the Houston area and Isaiah Hoofkin, who's going to be there. Same thing with a couple of receivers and Shea Whiting and Johnny Carter. Outside of that, it's just a lot of guys who, you know, may have kind of received some interest, but maybe they're still kind of keeping them on the line. You know, guys that I don't think will eventually get an offer, but hey, they're in town and they want to invite, you know, their teammates and whatnot. So they're doing that. I think where it gets interesting is where we kind of look at the 2020 class. And I think, you know, both from y'all's end and from the tech end, since they can't meet with any of the coaches and they're just going to be there, right? If, you know, especially for Ole Miss being out of state, it's an opportunity for them to show what they can do. And they've already, you know, have a presence in Texas and have had some success recruiting. So as you look at 2020, you've got a kid, a wide receiver in DeMond, I think it's Demas. I don't know exactly how you pronounce that, but he's got 40 plus offers. So you like to have kids that are, you know, of that ilk that are there. And then you've got a linebacker in Corey Flagg, who will be a premier 2020 linebacker here in the city of Houston. But just guys like that. I mean, and then of course there's some 2021 guys, but I mean, I don't know. It's hard for me to pay attention to 2021. You know, we're still so focused on 2019, but you know, at a high level, yes, I think there will be 30, 40, 50 kids there. How much they're able to tell you afterwards outside of just their thoughts from the game, I don't think will be too much different than some kid watching it on TV.
I'm so glad to hear you say that, because I hate some of the 2021 stuff, and I mean, and anything past that, when we start doing the stuff with like eighth graders about ranking them number one, I hate, and then number two about what schools are in the lead.
Yeah,
as someone, I've got a high school senior in my house who's basically made her college decision. I have a high school sophomore in my house who, there's just no way she's capable of making a college decision, and she's a really bright kid who's going to score 30 plus on the ACT. There's no way that I just, we do it, and I know why we do it, but sometimes I wish as an industry, not as an industry, I wish Rivals as an organization would say, I realize that other people do this and they do it because of clicks and hits and stuff, but we're going to be, yep, we're going to be the bigger man. I wish we could get to that place. I know that's a fantasy, but it really, yeah, it really bothers me. It rubs me the wrong way, and it I can't be the only person that feels that way.
Yeah, and like I said, I mean, we could probably talk that into the dirt, but yeah, we're on the same page. I didn't want people like listening to me for the first time thinking that, yeah, oh yeah, 2021 class is going to be there. It's going to be great. I mean, it is what it is. You know, I mean, if you're a 21 kid and you watch this on your beautiful HD TV, and I'll just take Tech as an example, they impress and they have a good win. Yeah, maybe that leads you to follow a coach or follow them back or keep an eye on them, right? But it's not going to be some like big win. If you do win the game and they're there in person, they're not going to like fall in love with Texas Tech. It's not on campus, and you know, you're at a pro stadium. I mean, we've done this enough. Tech plays Baylor every year at Cowboys Stadium, and we have to do this. Tech does a scrimmage at the Cowboys practice facility, like a spring game every year. We have to do this. I think I did 153 names for the Frisco scrimmage last time, and I'm not going to interview 153 kids who are, you know, 2021, 2020 and all that, but even the 2019 kids with an offer, hey, what'd you think of the game? It was great. It was a scrimmage. Like, and then where does the conversation go from there? You know, you can't talk to the coaches. You can't go on the field. You can't go to the locker room. So, yeah, I just don't want to portray it as something that it's not.
So you're not expecting any commitments?
I mean, no. I would expect if it were me, right? And I'm a sales rep by day, right? Like I said earlier. So my idea is like, how do I sell these guys? How do I put myself in a position to win? And with your offers or your commitments, then yeah, certainly you want them to be there. You want them to kind of spread the good word if they're feeling it, on either way, right? Ole Miss or Tech. But even with your targets, you just want to follow up with them and win or lose. You want to set up that next step. You want to get them on campus. And even with these 2020 kids, hey, I hope you guys had fun. Thanks for coming out. We're going to be doing off-season camps on these dates. And when we're allowed to, we're going to come down and see you guys in action this fall. I mean, it should be as simple as that. There's no, hey, we watched you guys play at NRG. I'm ready to commit now. I think that's a long shot.
Yeah, I can agree with you on that. Now, is Tech still in on, is it King Doru or Duru?
It's Doru, is how I've been told. And yes, a lot of people think he's a Baylor lean, and I would agree with that. However, he told me a lot of good things from his official visit to Minnesota. That's another one of those rule changes that sort of kind of changed how we report what we do on that side, is that, you know, these kids can take the official visits during the spring and the summertime. So I would say Minnesota and Baylor, are little bit in the lead. I know that with West Texas kids, you know, they grow up in, I guess, whatever you want to call it, the country. And, you know, sometimes they just want to move away for college, and I respect that. So I think he might end up being one of those guys who just wants to, whether it's just move into Waco, which is 4 or 5 hours away, and stay in state, or go all the way to a place like Minnesota, or elsewhere. You know, I would understand that. I know the coaches are basically going to recruit him until he says no. So I would expect him to be back on campus. And, you know, Tech has a new running backs coach that played at Tech and that coached at Tech previously. So I think they have some momentum, but, you know, right now I would say Baylor if I had to choose for him.
Now, Ole Miss gets ridiculed quite a bit for having so many Ole Miss connections and ties on their current coaching staff. Does Texas Tech get any of that pushback at all for having so many alumni and people who went to the school?
You know, they did originally, when Cliff's original coaching staff 5 years ago was just full of alumni, and it was, you know, he was young, so those were guys he knew. And yeah, I mean, they got called like his frat bros and stuff like that. And, you know, it is what it is. But over the years, you know, they've sort of, the guys that did go to Tech that are on the staff now, you know, they've coached at places like Cal, they've coached at Washington State, they've coached at Oklahoma State, they've coached at other programs, and they have real experience versus, hey, you know, I just got a job and I need a wide receivers coach. And, you know, Eric Morris, who's now the University of Incarnate Word head coach, you know, he was basically a grad assistant and assistant with Cliff at Houston. And that was the extent of his experience. And when he came over, same thing with, you know, a lot of the guys on that original staff were, they're really good coaches. But I think ultimately what happened is when he hired David Gibbs wanted his own guys, and you know, fair enough, right? I think that's where you've seen some of that parity. And really, right now, the only guys that are on staff besides Kingsbury are Clay McGuire, who's the running backs coach, and Brandon Jones, who's the offensive line coach. You know, whereas before it was, I think, like 5 or 6 guys. So yes and no. I think people are excited to get McGuire back because he was a pretty good recruiter. And the same thing with Brandon Jones, just from a technique perspective, we've seen a lot of improvements on the Tech line. And you know, anytime you've got a team that's kind of average or performing just okay, you want to shake it up on the coaching staff. I don't think they dislike the previous offensive line coach, but, you know, sometimes things get stale and you need a new voice in the room. So I think that's helped a lot too. So I don't know. I don't know if that answers the question, but yes or no. I mean, a little bit of both.
Yeah, I can see that, definitely. Now, two quick things kind of before we wrap things up. Who would you say are some of the best recruiters on that staff currently at Texas Tech?
I would say Zach Spavadal on the defensive side. He's gotten promoted to co-DC and linebackers coach. They promoted him because some other programs were coming around. He's sort of David Gibbs Jr. He's been his number two both at Houston and now at Texas Tech. His dad is a legendary Oklahoma high school coach, and so he's got ties to Oklahoma, and he's been coaching in Texas for almost a decade, so he's got some good ties here around the state. And if you look at Houston and what they did there, and now you look at Tech, I mean, Tech is not used to producing guys on defense for the next level. And now you're starting to see some of that come to fruition. And if you look back at Houston, because David Gibbs has an NFL background, his father's an NFL coach. So a lot of that has sort of come to fruition when you look at their time at Houston and now at Tech. So I think that he may not get the 4- and 5-star guys, but they have a really good eye for talent. They evaluate it really well. And I think that time in Houston and now at Texas Tech has helped them build some relationships with maybe those underclassmen that they were recruiting at the time. So I would say Spavital on the defensive side. On the offensive side, you know, I'd have to give it to the new offensive coordinator, Kevin Johns. He came in, I think it's from Western Minnesota or something like that, but he had previously been at Indiana, and had a stint at Northwestern as well. And he's just been a good relationship type guy. You know, a lot of, you know, you do these stories and you crank out 6 or 7 updates a week and you hear some of the same names, and you know, every coaching staff's different, and it could be a running back or a receiver that's being talked to by the receivers coach or the running backs coach, but he's involved, you know, he's involved constantly. So I would say him so far just because of the immediate results. But if I had to fall back on anyone else, it would be Emmett Jones. And he's a guy that before all these new rules came about, you know, with high school coaches, he was added as a high school coach. He was a head coach at South Oak Cliff, you know, which was a big producer on the recruiting trail, as I'm sure you guys are aware, here in Texas in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. So he brings a lot of ties to high school coaches, brings a lot of ties to really that community and you know, some of the younger kids as well. So we've just seen a lot more results from the DFW area and just getting in with different relationships from him.
Last thing, some of our people want to hear this because you're around the Texas Tech program some, just kind of your gut expectations of Saturday morning. I mean, if you want to include a prediction, that's great, but just kind of the kind of game you sort of see unfolding. These first games are always sort of weird to predict, and you don't really know what either team necessarily is going to have as an identity. That's certainly the case in Oxford, and from the sounds of it, it's things are a little different in Lubbock than what people are used to. Just kind of, what do you expect to see on Saturday?
So for Saturday, I think that both of these teams are playing at a neutral site, but it's the first game of the year. Everybody's going to come out really amped, and like I said, a lot of these, both these teams have something to prove, right? And I think they can make a statement with this first game. I think we're going to see that initial, you know, either fumbles, interceptions, mistakes, or something that gets the whole adrenaline out of the way, and they'll settle down a little bit. You know, I haven't done like any in-depth research besides our conversations and reading some articles on Ole Miss, but you know, clearly they've got a lot of weapons on offense and they've got some good offensive linemen. So I think that battle up front will tell us a lot early in the game, and kind of seeing what the Tech defense is in year two of this whole improvement that they've gone through. But for me, I mean, I'm of the mind that McClain Carter is going to start. McClain Carter's not going to beat you with his arm like a Patrick Mahomes or someone in the past where they can just rifle it in wherever they want. I think they're going to very much ask him to play within the system. They'll script the first, you know, couple drives with some dink and dunk type plays. But I think what really will come out is that with McClain, they're going to do a lot more RPO type stuff, meaning that, you know, they're going to try to establish that run game, and he may hold on to it a few times. And it really wouldn't surprise me for them to play two quarterbacks and to play multiple quarterbacks depending on the situation. And I ultimately think, I don't think it's a secretive, like, hey, let's keep a secret and surprise Ole Miss. I think that Kingsbury thinks that he can win with Carter, but he can also have him on a short leash and give someone else a chance to move the football. Because if they come out and, you know, they're, you know, one and done, or they move the ball but don't get points, you know, I don't think, you know, with his job on the line, I don't think he's just going to cross his fingers and hope it works out later on in the second half, if you know what I mean.
So you would be the one, you would be seeing Jet Duffy, the heir apparent to Maverick.
I would. There's been a lot of talk about true freshman Alan Bowman. I just think so Duffy's one of those guys, you know, I think we talked yesterday about Shea Patterson, and I don't know what the reports of him were. Duffy was not highly rated like Patterson or anything like that, but in terms of a smaller guy who can make plays and sort of be that. And I hate the comparison of Johnny Manziel, but everybody does it. The Baker Mayfield, where, you know, move his feet, make plays, you know, move to their right, make plays. I watched him do that in high school. I think some players in practice, when they're just running these shell drills and the receivers are running routes and they're just throwing and going through the minutiae of practice, they look very underwhelming. But when the lights are on and the other team is trying to take your head off, then they really shine. And I think he's that kind of a guy. So I'm not, everyone's kind of slated him as, oh, he hasn't been that impressive. But he's another guy who I think could step in and do some really good things with his feet, but also just making plays within the offense. So I don't know. I'm kind of split. I think that we'll have the vanilla decision to go with Carter, but I honestly think that you could see multiple quarterbacks.
Well, Matt, hey, I appreciate the time. I know this is a really busy time of year for you. We'll definitely be able to get you back on kind of maybe after the game or later this season.
Sounds good. I really appreciate you guys.
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate you.
All right. Bye.
Our thanks to Matt for joining us on the program today. This program is brought to you in part by the Storage Acquisition Group. The Storage Acquisition Group is an industry-leading expert at identifying and acquiring strategically located storage facilities throughout North America and beyond as the preferred buyer for one of the largest private owners of self-storage in the world. Director Monty Spencer and his team have upended the acquisition market by giving facility owners a new avenue to divest. How exactly can self-storage facility owners benefit? It's simple. The group buys direct and charges no commission or fees. Their free, no-obligation evaluation even means that you can get a comprehensive picture of your property's value without the need to commit. If you're thinking, yeah, but I don't own a self-storage facility, I was just enjoying the podcast, well, then listen to this. Even if you're not an owner, you can benefit too. The Storage Acquisition Group's buyer has a generous referral program in place for referrals that lead to a closed transaction. Visit www.thestorageacquisitiongroup.com to find out more. What else going on, Russell?
So Ole Miss is able to have visitors for this game this weekend in Houston, and two prominent targets who have been on the Ole Miss campus. Well, Wertemeyer was here, for multiple nights during the summer, and he's a four-star tight end from Texas, obviously from Dickinson. He will be there. He's planning on bringing his people, as he said when I talked to him this morning. And then three-star wide receiver Langston Anderson from Midlothian Heritage, who at one point was at Jackson Academy and transferred over to Texas to kind of get some more exposure and everything. He's trying to trim his list down of schools. Right now, I would say Oklahoma State and Ole Miss are the two standing out the most. I actually wasn't aware how high he was on Ole Miss. Like, I didn't realize he was still a serious target, you know, with the commits they have currently. But Langston Anderson is a really realistic target at the wide receiver position, especially if they lose one of Jordan Jernigan or Javonte Payton, possibly to Mississippi State. Getting to Javonte Payton, Northwest Community College wide receiver, who's getting ready to begin his second season there since being placed after not qualifying from Hillsboro in Nashville. He's got offers from both Tennessee and Mississippi State now. And, you know, Tennessee being the home school kind of may eventually be able to push him over the edge to possibly open things up with his recruitment. The Mississippi State offer was really a long time coming. They had wanted him to camp over the summer. I'm not sure either way if he did show up. I know when I talked to him, he didn't mention them. But that was something that they were really high on, especially seeing that Dannis Jackson and Jonathan Mingo are both committed to Ole Miss. To Wertemeyer is one of the more realistic tight end targets still out there. Tight end is a position of need for this class. They didn't get a commit last year after missing out on Glenn Beal to Texas A&M on signing day eve. Texas A&M's got their own problems brewing in College Station. But with the tight end position, Wertemeyer would be a great fit. He really impressed myself and the staff during the Ole Miss camp circuit. So that's something to keep an eye on. And then also this weekend, we got some finality on the injury of Buford, Georgia offensive lineman Carter Colquitt. He has a torn ACL, a torn MCL, and a fracture in his tibia. And they're actually forcing him right now to do a little bit of rehab before getting the surgery on his ACL, just to try to get the swelling down and to kind of build some strength before being able to relieve the pain. So when I talked to him yesterday, he didn't want to talk much.
That's a shame.
Yeah, and
that's a significant injury.
Oh yeah, it is. And the Ole Miss staff has been in touch with Colquitt. It seems like as of right now, they do plan to honor his commitment. Like I mentioned in the past, the whole situation with DeMarcus Gregory last year might bring up some buyer beware questions from the fan base. But at the offensive line, where they've already got what he's the eighth offensive lineman commit.
You have to honor it, don't you?
If Buford, Georgia, you better.
No. In general.
As a person.
Yeah. It's
morality.
It's one of the reasons that I say every so often I'll have a parent. I don't anymore much because I don't cover it. You do, thank God. Every so often I would have a parent say, do you have any advice? And I said, I can't give you advice. But if your son knows where he wants to go to school, whether it's Tennessee or Ole Miss or ULM or Florida or Arizona, wherever it may be, if he knows where he wants to go to school, he should commit publicly. Now, if you commit publicly and you start taking other visits, that's not really a commitment. And that gives the school some leeway. But if he commits publicly and goes, I'm done. I'm going to South Carolina. Go Gamecocks. Let's go get them. And that's the only school he visits. And that's where he takes his unofficial visits. And he wears his garnet and black to school every day. And then he gets hurt. They're kind of on the hook.
Yeah, you're not stuck. I guess isn't the right word to say, but you're hooked, like you said. You know, you've got to do the.
It's a bad look if you bail on the kid,
right? And something like that, similar to what happened at Rutgers when Chris Ash first got there. He dropped an in-state kid. I think it was a week before signing day, and that hasn't exactly cooled the seat up there at Rutgers. So I mean that you can't. Do that unless, number one, you have good reason to, if he's, you know, flirting around with other schools, and if you definitely don't see him making an impact in the first 2 or 3 years he's there.
It's a hard call.
It is. And
then you watch, like, DeMarcus Gregory. This is not picking on him because he seems like a great kid. But you can't help but be a little cynical, a little skeptical about, is he going to be able to come back and play at a high level? And I certainly hope he does. Don't get me wrong. I always, you've known me long enough. I cheer for the kids, man. I'm pro kid. Like when people that kid got paid, good for him. I'm for the kids. But you can't help but wonder. When you watch him run around, is he ever going to be the player that he was going to be before the injury? And again, 1,000%, I hope so. Not because he's at Ole Miss, but because he's a kid. I love to see kids see their dreams fulfilled. It's a good thing. But you don't. I wouldn't blame Ole Miss in this case if they took a step back and said, at the very least, hey, do you want a gray shirt? Do you want to make sure you're healthy? I don't know. I don't know. It's a shame for the kid, man. That's. Number one, I hate it for the kid because that's got to be a nervous thing. And you got to rehab, and that's not just an ACL. That's an ACL and an MCL, and there's a bone involved, and that's a lot. But I get it. I get it. If a school were to say, hey, we've got to have a conversation here. I get it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean – you have the previous experience, and I mean, like you said, Ole Miss is dealing with it right now with Gregory. That, you know, they know what could happen, and they know what is likely to happen at the same time. Now wrapping things up, you know, we're gonna go rapid fire here with linebackers.
Okay,
linebacker target from Georgia, Jamie Pettway, got the Georgia Tech offer that he's been wanting. He's planning on going to Georgia Tech this weekend, and I'm told that if he wants to commit, Georgia Tech will take him on the spot this weekend. That's the 3-star who did receive the official offer when they were first able to in August. Another linebacker target, with everything going on with Urban Meyer, which we won't discuss at all on here, but Kane Patterson from Nashville decided to open things up. And while he hasn't made a public statement, he did say on a radio show that he was decommitting and he really wants to take his time this time around. While he does want to take his time, I currently don't expect Ole Miss to be seriously in the picture. Will they talk to him? Yes. Would they like to have him? Of course. But right now I see it more of a Clemson-Alabama battle, and Clemson's got some number crunching to do themselves if they plan on taking Kane Patterson to go along with Levante Bentley, who they stole another one from the state of Alabama. Wrapping things up, you had K.O. Deolodele, the 2018 signee who was at Auburn, and everybody, as soon as he was released from his NLI, was hoping he would come to Ole Miss, and was, you know, it was a topic of discussion for about a day, and then people started realizing kind of why Auburn shied away, and he ended up at Memphis and showed up at practice today. So Ole Miss is going to be going against him likely in, was that 2019 they opened
up? Yeah, next year I think they opened at Memphis.
Yeah, so even if he doesn't play this year, as long as he's still on campus in the Bluff City, that's where they'll be playing against him, lining up against him next year. And it'll either probably be Darius Thomas or Obina Easy. That's the Memphis O-lineman. It would be, oh, what is his name? I'm thinking Caleb Etienne, offensive lineman from Warren Easton. You weren't going to get that. No worries. And then wide receiver from Arkansas, Jaden Jackson, continues to be close to finalizing and making his decision public. It's been thought and rumored for him to be an Ole Miss lean for quite some time. And whether or not that comes to fruition, it'll be interesting to see. Arkansas is filled up with other targets at the position. So, I mean, you kind of just got to read between the lines there with that.
We'll leave it there. We'll come back next week. Ole Miss, Texas Tech will be in the books. We'll be getting ready for the home opener at Ole Miss. Southern Illinois comes to town next weekend. We'll get an idea of what prospects and such are headed that way, as I think Ole Miss would like to get kids on campus as early and often as possible, given the possibility of bad appeal news. So a lot of kids probably coming in next weekend for Ole Miss and Southern Illinois. We'll talk about that topic and more next week on the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Billy's Pecans. Again, our thanks to Matt Clare. Thanks to Russell Johnson. I'm Neil McCready. Until next week, take care.